This is a Career Channel program from UC San Diego Extension. Visit us at www.uctv.tv/careers for videos, employment news, and trend articles to help recent college graduates and grads in career transition bridge to better employment. Hi, welcome to Career Talk. I'm your host, Henry DeVries, Assistant Dean for UC San Diego Extension and a career columnist for UT San Diego. Here's how you as an audience member can participate in the show. Feel free to type in your questions and we will address them toward the end of the program. Today on this episode of Career Talk, we visit with productivity mentor and coach Lynn Kaufman, co-author of the book Slay the Email Dragon. Before forming her own company, Kaufman often found herself helping others improve their work processes and systems to optimize their productivity. She decided to utilize and share these skills professionally in 2004, joined Michael Valentine to become a co-founding principal of Kaufman Valentine Associates. Michael's her co-author of the book. He's in our studio today also. Welcome, Michael. Yes, he's waving to everyone on the radio. So every day is Valentine's Day for Michael. So welcome here, but welcome on our Valentine's Day edition. Back to Lynn. Lynn's an implementation specialist with years of experience coaching senior leaders in their groups with personal and unit productivity skills. So she has lots of background that I'm sure we'll talk about as we get further into it. But welcome, Lynn. Let's start with your career and how you help people.
Thank you, Henry. Pleasure to be here with you this morning. We like to make people work more effectively, and most of our work is with knowledge workers. And a knowledge worker is really anyone who has to make judgment and has control over when and what they do in the course of their normal work. We find that it is very easy to be distracted, to get off course, and so we have some methodologies and suggestions that we do put through our book, Slay the Email Monster, which is more than just email. It is really going through the entirety of what you have to do to get disciplines and routines in place in order to get the most work done.
Well, you know I'm a big fan of the book, and it's really helped me. Why don't we talk a little bit about it, because I think it would help anybody in any career that they're in. What's the main principle, the main message of your book?
The main message is that you really need to take a look at what it is you need in order to get your work done. And there needs to be using the tools available to you to help support that work and customize them and customize the way you approach your work to make sure you get the biggest bang for your effort buck.
Hmm. So we're all drowning in a lot of emails. How does your book help us not drown?
Well, it's actually a lot simpler than you might first think. We often go in when we're talking to people and we ask them what they do in the course of their work, and they all say, I do email. Email, of course, is not your work. Email is really just a communication channel and a business tool. So when people understand those two different principles about how they approach their email, they know which one they're separating from which. And so the first thing that people need to understand is, what is the process that I approach to my email? Michael likes to give a story about it. It's the same as if you go to your mailbox in the snail mail days, a little hard to say fast, when you go out to your mailbox. Usually you pick up whatever mail has been dropped off by the postman and you bring it in. It doesn't have stuff, oh, I didn't want to deal with it, and you shove it back into the mailbox. We find that habit happening a lot with email systems. People are skimming and scanning and going, I don't want to deal with it, it's not important enough, I don't know what it is, I don't know how to respond to it. There's all kinds of things in self-talk that they're saying to themselves, but it ultimately ends up there are hundreds, if not thousands, of emails, often in inboxes when we go and look at what people have. So we want people to understand it's a communication tool, and the goal is that it should be, when you are ready to go to it, just like your mailbox off the curb of your house, you pull everything out and empty it each time you go. That is difficult for people at first, but when they see the principle of how it makes them feel in more control of their work and not overwhelmed before they even start, that goes a long way. In addition, we also want to understand what technology tools they're using. We work with multiples of technologies. Most businesses we work with do use Outlook, but we have familiarity with Lotus Notes. We understand some people are on the systems that are with through Apple, and we also understand there could be some other groupware that governments or different entities are using. So we understand the principles and the capabilities of these different tools, and so we want to understand how to utilize them best to help you in your decision-making processes.
Now, when you think about efficiency at work, I'm always thinking of a McDonald's and how efficient it is to get a hamburger and fries to you, or when you're making a Toyota pickup truck, how efficient it is to move it down the line. But you're really helping people in the office, in the executive suites. Is that right?
That's right. And people have to understand that in knowledge work, there's both an efficiency and an effectiveness. When you're talking about managing your email, we lean into the efficiency portion of that equation. It is really kind of the same no matter how you do it. You get an email in, you have to open and read it, you have to decide what you're going to do with it, and then you have to decide how that's going to get done. Virtually every email that I've ever seen in the course of my 20 years of working with just regular messaging and then email has been that same process. So you approach it just like you would moving a Toyota truck down the plant. You have to do that process in that linear step-by-step process with each email. Now, you're doing this in split seconds of decision-making because it becomes an ingrained instinct almost to do it. It's like learning to drive. You don't have to think real hard about, you know, put the brake on if there's an emergency that you need to know you have to stop. Email will get that rote after you've done the processing. But it is that simple and that consistent every time you look at an email communication.
So tell me about Kaufman Valentine. What exactly do you do when you come in and you work with a group of executives?
Well, if we're working with an individual executive, it's a little bit different than if we're looking with an entire group, because we do both. We do improve the efficiency and effectiveness of individuals within an organization, usually on the executive or high potential type of person. And we also are looking at entire departments or groups that are trying to increase the effectiveness. Email is a team sport. It's actually not an individual sport. So we have to look at it from both of those elements. Most people, when they're drowning, think it is all about them. But it actually shows up when we go in and look at their email. It's kind of a window into their corporate soul. We see a lot of things that are happening there. We're seeing miscommunications. We're seeing who's miscommunicating with whom. We're seeing how there are some bad habits with things. We're seeing how they are or are not managing their projects well. There's really a lot in that window of communications. So we want to first just kind of clear the weeds a little bit before we get into the deeper things. And the weeds is we just want to help you get it so you're not feeling overwhelmed. And so that's what we do with the individuals first. In our teamwork, our unit work, we're doing that, but we're looking at it with a little bit higher level picture. So it's not so much about your perfection of efficiency. It's about how do we get the communications across the group or sometimes across functions so that it doesn't clog and break down somewhere.
Now, there's a lot been said about email smog. You said this is a team sport, and you can be doing things with email that really slows down the team. Do you have some examples of that?
Yeah, there are actually three things to think about. We do lay this out in our book, so that we have a lot of these techniques in there. But basically, when you're looking at your email as a communication tool, you can look at it as one of three things. One, it's a handoff. And a handoff, it's great if you want to just say, you know, we're going to meet, the spring picnic is going to be at 2:00 on Thursday, the 17th of March. That's simple. You're really not expecting any kind of return. You're just handing off a piece of information that you don't need to be able to do anything with. That's a perfect example of how email can be used effectively. The second way people tend to use email is when there's some coordination happening. In other words, are we going to be able to have this meeting on Tuesday or do we need it on Thursday of next week? Well, if you're asking one person, that's somewhat simple. If you're asking that of about 5 or 6 people, all of a sudden you're multiplying your email by a somewhat exponential number, because some can do it Tuesday afternoon, some can do it Tuesday morning, some want Thursday afternoon, someone goes, I don't like either one of those days, I want to do it the following week. So you start getting a lot of smog going back and forth just on what appeared at first as a simple coordination. If it is in fact a simple coordination, it's pretty simple. I can do it here. I accept that. The third way, which is where most people get into trouble with their email, is when they're using it as a collaborative tool. It's frankly lousy as a collaborative tool. It's similar to the illustration that I gave earlier. You're asking input from multiples of people, and on that simple coordination exercise I just talked about, it may take two or three little routes, and you can relatively simply draw it back in. But what if you're asking about a problem-solving question, and it's going to five or six different people? And before you know it, that subject line has no relationship at all to the conversation that keeps coming back. And that pinging back and forth is eating up vast amounts of time and not resolving the issue in a timely manner. That's when we have to look at it in a different way.
Now, in the book, you talk about something that made me smile. It was called MUDA. Tell us am I pronouncing it correctly?
You are.
Okay. Well, tell me what MUDA is.
MUDA is a Japanese word for waste. And a lot of our underlying principles for how we approach productivity for knowledge workers is based on that MUDA idea that is in lean processing that Toyota pioneered 20, 25 years ago. It's older than that. It goes back to Deming. It goes back at the beginning of the industrial age in the 1900s on how to make production move quickly. So MUDA is the waste. So we're trying to remove waste in the knowledge work so that it makes you more effective. In other words, you're working harder than you need to. We want to take that hard part out so you can just work somewhat fluidly.
It's amazing how the MUDA adds up. And when I, from reading your work, I've really become attuned to it. And in our own organization, someone was trying to schedule a meeting and they picked a date and then they sent an email out that says, add this to your calendar, and they gave the date. And I thought, well, that meant 17 people had to go into their calendar and add that. And I suggested to them, oh, why don't you just send that as something that we could agree to on Outlook to accept? And they said, I don't do that. So there was no concept that they were wasting 17 people's, a little bit of that time, which adds up. I was amazed to find that if people follow your principles, you can get done normally what takes you 40 hours in like 32.
Yes.
Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's a pretty fair statement. This is really just tightening up stuff you already do. And most people, when they are starting their first job, they're very excited. They go in and find their desk, and the supervisor says, here, start. And then the emails come, and the meetings come, and the people you have to deal with come. And all this stuff comes on you, and in most cases, we find no one really teaches you how to work. You may go to school and become a terrific accountant and know all the ins and outs of being an accountant or a research scientist or whatever specialty that you're going to school to learn. But the principles of how you work effectively are seldom actually taught. So everyone is coping their way through it to the best of their ability. We find most people are working hard and they're getting the job done, but that's just the point. They're working harder than they need to on the stuff they shouldn't be working hard on. They need to let that stuff become more routine so they can put their knowledge and mental power behind the things that are hard to work with. And so they don't always understand it. They haven't seen it. It's invisible. So you're right about your illustration. You're sending out these invitations, and there are more effective ways of getting the job done. People are not aware of the capabilities. They don't even know the opportunities. So they're just coping.
I guess it's like tools in a toolkit. If you don't know how to use the tool, you won't use the tool. So you're teaching people how to use the tools of technology.
That's right. In fact, when we go in to talk to people, we often ask them, what are the tools of your trade? And a lot of times they go, oh, well, let's see, I have a computer, and I have a phone, and we have, you know, there's email and paper and files and it kind of trails off. Okay, those are pieces of what you do, but it's a lot more sophisticated now. So how do you have to communicate? How do you have to hold your meetings? How many people do you have to manage or oversee? How many people do you have to interface with? They all give a different complexion, if you will, to the tools. Right now, everybody has an app for something. Okay, those are not toys. Those are tools. But are you using them that way? We're finding that as an extension. And when we have our upcoming book coming besides this, it's kind of going beyond just what email is, because there's now other communication channels that have kind of muddied the water. Although a lot of those channels are still pushing email notifications into your mailbox.
It's interesting. I met with the librarian for all of San Diego County, and she's in charge of, you know, dozens and dozens of libraries. And she says, now we're letting people talk in the libraries because they need to collaborate. And you need to bring in your cell phones because there are apps that you need to be using. So even the libraries are having to change.
Yes.
The joke about please don't talk in the library is over. So I see we're evolving. Well, let's talk about evolving careers, because you're at a lot of companies. I mean, you're at San Diego Zoo and Sempra and Toyota and American Cancer Society. So you see a lot of companies and talk to them. What trends are you seeing, or what advice would you have for someone in their career?
Well, there is a huge, huge sea change happening with companies coming on board with dealing with the aspects of social, mobile, higher level analytics, and the cloud computing. Mm. All of those four technologies, if you will, or capabilities are converging and essentially changing the way you do business. It's changing entire industries. Just think about Borders and Amazon. Think how books have so dramatically changed. So the rate of change about how you have to look at your business models, or as an individual worker, how you work, has to move from what it used to be. So when we're talking to people, we have to understand what it is they work. And if I had to pick one giant trend that workers have to do with, it is what I'm going to call working with collaborative colleagues virtually. And so what you find now when you're going to a lot of these larger companies is people really are not, so to speak, chained to their desks. In the olden days, you went to an office, you stayed at your desk, and you worked at your desk. That's not what's happening. I think there's a statistic that's recently out of Harvard Business Review that said within the next few years, at any rate, about 30% of workers will never be full-time in an office. Mm-hmm. They may be colleagues, and they come in and out of the office. If you think about it now, many managers and senior executives don't sit at their desk. They're moving around all over the place. They are still in a company, but they're moving all of the time. So that has tremendously changed the way people have to think about FaceTime and how they use their tools.
Okay. Well, let's talk about obstacles in the workplace right now. What are you seeing as some of the obstacles that are out there?
That resistance to change is probably one of the biggest obstacles. The uncertainty and insecurity about, I don't know how to do this. Will I not look like I'm competent? And so we have to overcome a lot of resistance, and that is going both directions. We find a lot of people we're using the term Michael in the middle. You have to be able to communicate and respond and perhaps persuade senior management as well as people that you work with or you supervise. And so the understanding that different networking idea of working versus the hierarchical way of working is huge. That's a huge change and a huge resistance, and that you must constantly be reinventing yourself by re-educating yourself.
Mm. Where can people go to get education on these four major areas you talked about?
I'm sorry, are the four ages, the social, the mobile?
Yes.
Okay. From the IT world, everybody is talking about that. From a more user experience person, it is traveling so fast. You want to look at colleagues that may be working more effectively than you and ask them about what they're doing. Obviously, you can call people like Michael and myself, who can come in and analyze and show you where there may be some opportunities. And you can either study, take the time to learn how to do it yourself, or you can hire people like us that can help you get through that point quicker. We work both as coaches and as trainers and as organizational development people, depending on what the complexity of the issue is. Mm. Our book, of course, Slay the Email Monster, would be a good starting point just to get control of your own individual productivity.
Good plug for the book.
Thank
good job. Yeah. You know, something that I got out of the book that was so great was this idea of not having a to-do list with deadlines, but having a task list on when you were going to start a project. When you're going to start is more important than when you're supposed to finish. Could you comment on that?
Right. You know, that's what we see. That's one of the things we see. It's called procrastination with all caps. What that amounts to is if you're opening up one of your emails in your inbox and you go, okay, that's not due yet. I don't need to think about it. Or I don't know how to start that. When you start hearing questions like this to yourself, you have to make kind of drive a stake into the sand, or it will languish until it becomes so urgent that you're working in crisis all of the time. So you're right. It's, instead of just holding it, I'll come back to it, kind of keeping it in a vague manner, decide for yourself that I'm going to start to work on this project. And start can be I'm just going to write two sentences and pick a date. It doesn't have to be the right date, the perfect date. Doesn't really matter. The point is you have decided for yourself you are going to actively decide what you're going to do the next action. Or not decide, you've decided that you're going to do that next action on this date. You can always change your mind after you get there. But it's always about getting the start. It's harder to get the inertia moving. That's the hardest part about any project.
Because knowledge workers are juggling so many balls. Is that the view?
They're doing nothing but juggling, really.
Yeah.
And that's one of the other obstacles that people have to overcome. How do I manage all of this work and keep all the balls in the air? And the problem is most people think, how do I become more efficient so I can get all of this done? Perhaps a better question is, should I be doing it at all?
Now, in your own career, what do you think was the biggest factor for your success?
Well, I talk to Michael a lot about, I grew up on a farm, and on a farm, a real farm, where you had to get up in the morning and you had to make sure the ice was broken so the cattle could drink in the morning and take hay out at night after school. I had to work on a farm. And it wasn't a matter of if you wanted to do it, it has to get done. So that basic discipline of doing things, whether you like it or you don't like it, those chores, if you will, that must be done, of which email really is. Email is a chore. Everybody has it. Everybody has to do it. You have to just know when you're scheduling it in on a consistent, routine basis so you can do whatever it is you need to do in your business, just like you know the cattle are going to thrive and you can sell them at market.
Mm. I, too, grew up on a farm. It's a good place to be from.
I'll agree with the farm
yes,
part.
Yes. Now, what's a key practice or strategy you keep coming back to in your career and that you advise others to think about?
I think, to be honest, discipline is important, but I think reflection. Knowledge workers don't take enough time to think, and yet that's what they're paying you to do.
Mm.
So you have to think about your work, not as much as maybe you fear, but you do need to reflect every day, absorb, reassess, make sure that you're always tracking in the right direction. So I think taking that time, it may be only 15 minutes a day, but that time will reap huge benefits.
I know from your advice I followed that there's one time a week that I just stop and take a deep breath and look at it all and reassess. It doesn't take but 15 minutes, but it also gives you peace of mind. Let's talk about another area that people struggle with. This idea that they have to check email constantly. Do you have a comment on that?
It's addicting, is what most people do. We live in an instant society, and it's kind of like way back, I forgot the year, it's been a long time when they had the bing, you've got mail. Came through. And the reason that got people so excited, because it does actually feed into the dopamine areas of your brain as, ooh, I have a present. I wonder what it's about. It's probably much more interesting than what I'm working on right now. You cannot help yourself. You were kind of biologically driven to go there. So what you need to do to help you overcome that and work with yourself, with your own character instead of against your character, because willpower is overrated.
Okay.
So what you have to do when you have that is turn off the ding. If it doesn't ding, you can't react. If you turn off the visual, you can't react. So now you're choosing when to go. pull that information and add it in a steady way into the stream of your work. And so that would be, I'd say, a huge improvement. Whether it's email or it's texting, there's a lot of texting binging going on. Same principle.
Right. So how many times a day do you recommend a knowledge worker go into their email?
Well, the actual answer would be it depends. That doesn't give you much to go on.
Sounds like a lawyer's answer or an economist's answer.
Because every knowledge worker has a little different element to their work. But by and large, I would say it would be safe to say 4 times a day is more than sufficient to go look at your inbox, empty it to zero, and then get back to work. So that is usually first thing in the morning, not the first thing you do in the morning, but within, you know, 30 minutes of starting your work day. Doing a little before lunch, a little after lunch, and about an hour before your end of your workday. And as a general rule, that will keep you in a very sustainable routine method. It will not only help your work, but you will train others that you respond in that timely manner.
And this is the thing that blows a lot of people away. You're actually recommend to clear your entire email box and send it to different folders. Is that right?
Yeah, I am truly recommending that you empty it every single time. Now, that doesn't mean you've answered everything to the fullest and you've done everything, because not everything is that simple. But it is nothing more than a mailbox. There's nothing magic about it. So get the information and move on. Now, what we find is we often ask people, one of the first things we do when we're talking in one of our seminars is we ask, how many emails are you typically getting? And we get an answer in a corporation anywhere from 50 to 200 is a pretty average answer. Well, it takes approximately 2 minutes to process an email. Well, 200 emails times 2 minutes is a lot of time, and you still haven't gotten any work done. So it's about reducing the volume, and you know you're getting a lot of email that really has little or no value to you. So it's not so much about the efficiency of going through them, it's about the effectiveness of filtering better so it doesn't even get to your inbox.
Last question. Give us your best piece of advice you haven't given us already for people to advance their career with these techniques.
Stay current. Use the ones you have effectively. Don't always go to the next new shiny object technology. Work the ones you have effectively.
Okay. Well, thank you, Lynn. It's been a pleasure chatting with you today. Thanks for a great episode of Career Talk. I really recommend to everybody to get the book, Slay the Email Monster. It makes a big difference. As I said, you can free up a whole day of your work week, and then you can use that day for those projects that are going to make a difference. I know as a supervisor, I used to have two people who worked for me, and one, they were both go-getters. One worked a good 12 hours a day. She would put in 11, 12 hours a day. Another one was there 8 to 9 hours. So you'd say, well, which one got the most done? The person who was there for 8 to 9 hours. The other one, I don't know what happened, but work must have expanded to fill the space. She was not as productive and sharp when the promotions came. So I'd like to encourage all the listeners to really think about this on advancing your career is being effective and efficient. Thank you so much for joining us again today. I'd like to invite all our audience to join us again for our next show. That's going to be at 10:30 a.m. on March 14th. It's going to feature an author, Cynthia Burnham. She's the author of The Charisma Edge. Cynthia is a charisma coach, so she trains leaders how to have more charisma, to have a better leadership presence. So it's good advice for anybody on their way up on how to be a better presence at work. So she'll have great tips for all of us for getting ahead. Again, that's the second Thursday of March, March 14th at 10:30 a.m. Well, this is Henry DeVries. Until next time, wishing you career success.